Dingoes at Dinner Time. Chapter 1, The Last Gift. Annie sat on the porch steps. She stared down the street at the Frog Creek Woods.
"Hey, Jack," she said, "do you hear it?"
Jack sat next to her. He was reading a book. "Hear what?" he said.
"Teddy's calling us," said Annie.
"You're kidding," said Jack. But he looked down the street and listened, too. A faint bark came from the distance.
"Arf, arf."
A big smile crossed Jack's face.
"You hear it?" Annie said.
"Yep," said Jack. "You're right, time to go." He stood up and grabbed his backpack.
"Be back soon," Annie shouted through the screen door.
"Don't be late for dinner," their dad called.
"We won't," said Jack.
He and Annie ran down the street and into the Frog Creek Woods. Soon they came to the tallest oak. There was the magic treehouse. A little black nose stuck out the window.
"Hi, silly," Annie called. "We're coming."
"Arf,"
came a happy bark. Annie grabbed the rope ladder and started climbing. Jack followed her up into the treehouse. A small dog sat in a circle of afternoon sunshine. His tail wagged.
"Hey, Teddy," said Jack.
Jack and Annie hugged Teddy, and the dog licked both of them.
"Morgan's note is still here," said Annie.
"Yep," said Jack. He knew the note by heart now. "This little dog is under a spell and needs your help. To free him, you must be given 4 special things. A gift from a ship lost at sea, a gift from the prairie blue, a gift from a forest far away, a gift from a kangaroo. Be wise, be brave, be careful. Morgan." Beside the note were the gifts from their first 3 trips. 1, a pocket watch from the Titanic. 2, an eagle's feather from the prairie skies. 3, a lotus flower from a forest in India.
"We just need to get a gift from a kangaroo," said Annie, "and Teddy will be free from his spell."
"We must be going to Australia," said Jack. "That's where kangaroos live."
"Cool," said Annie.
Teddy whined and scratched at a book lying in the corner. Jack picked it up.
"What'd I tell you?" he said.
He showed the cover to Annie. The title was Adventure in Australia.
"Great," said Annie.
She looked at Teddy.
"Ready to meet a kangaroo?"
"Arf, arf."
Jack opened the book. He found a page with small pictures of different animals and a big picture of a forest. Jack pointed at the forest.
"I wish we could go there," he said.
The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 2, Sleepyhead. Jack opened his eyes. Glaring hot sunlight flooded into the treehouse.
"Neat hats," said Annie.
She and Jack were both wearing hats.
"I think they will protect us from the sun," said Jack.
He and Annie looked out the window. Teddy looked out, too. The treehouse had landed in a scrubby forest filled with droopy plants and dry brown trees.
"Man, this place needs rain," said Jack.
He sat back on his heels and looked at the picture of where they had landed in the Australia book. He read, "Australia's forests go through times of drought. A drought is a long period of time without any rain. The same forest can be flooded by heavy rains at other times of the year." Jack pulled out his notebook and wrote, "Drought equals no rain."
"Hey, Jack," said Annie, "doesn't it smell like a cookout?"
Jack sniffed the air. It did smell like a cookout. Jack looked out the window. A wisp of smoke floated above some trees in the distance.
"Maybe people are camping over there," Jack said.
"Let's go see," said Annie.
Jack put his notebook and the Australia book into his backpack.
"Put Teddy in there, too," said Annie.
Jack slipped the little dog into the pack. Then he followed Annie down the ladder. When they stepped onto the ground, the hot wind nearly blew their hats off.
The campers must be over there, said Annie.
She pointed at the smoke in the blue sky. They started walking across a sun-baked clearing. They passed bushes and scrawny trees. Lizards ran over the dry, cracked ground.
Arf, arf,
Teddy barked from Jack's pack. Whoa, said Jack. A pair of huge, funny-looking birds walked out from behind a bush. They were taller than Jack. They had fat bodies, long, skinny legs, and long, skinny necks.
Who are you?
Annie asked the strange pair. Jack opened his pack and took out the Australia book. He found a picture of the birds. They're emus, he said. He read aloud. The emu is a large bird that doesn't fly. It can run as fast as 30 miles per hour.
Wow, that's fast, said Annie.
Arf!
Teddy jumped out of Jack's backpack and barked at the strange birds. The emus gave the little dog a haughty look. Then they turned and walked proudly away. Jack wrote in his notebook, Emus, proud birds, don't fly.
Look, a live teddy bear, said Annie.
Jack looked up. Annie ran to a tree at the edge of the clearing. The live teddy bear was nestled in the fork of the tree.
Aw, it's so cute, whispered Annie.
The creature was fast asleep. He had large round ears, a black nose, and a furry body. His feet had long curved claws.
It's a koala bear, said Jack.
Hi, sleepy Ed,
Annie said to the koala. She patted his soft fur. He opened his big eyes and looked calmly at her. Jack found the koala picture in the Australia book. He read, The koala is actually not a bear at all. It's a marsupial, like a kangaroo. A marsupial mother carries her babies in a stomach pouch.
That's neat, said Annie.
Jack kept reading. Koalas mostly eat the leaves of gum trees, so cutting down gum trees to clear land has hurt them. Wildfires are also a threat. Koalas are slow-moving and can't escape the smoke and flames. Jack pulled out his notebook and wrote, Wildfires are a threat to koalas.
What's wrong, sleepyhead? Annie asked the koala. Don't you feel well?
Don't worry, said Jack. Listen to this. He read more from the book. Koalas like kangaroos are active at night and sleep during the day when the sun is hot. The name koala means no drink, because koalas rarely drink water. They get moisture from the leaves they eat. Jack licked his lips. His mouth felt dry. Speaking of water, he said, I'm thirsty.
Me too, said Annie.
Teddy was panting as if he was thirsty also. Let's find those campers, said Jack, sighing. Maybe they can give us some water. Jack put Teddy back into his pack. He tucked the book under his arm in case he needed to look something up. They began walking again. Suddenly, there was a loud, harsh cackle.
Yikes, said Annie. What was that? Said Jack.
Chapter 3. Bigfoot. The loud cry rang again through the dry air. Teddy barked. Jack and Annie turned around in the clearing. It was hard to tell where the sound was coming from. The terrible cackle came again.
There,
said Annie. She pointed at a bird in a gum tree. The bird had brown feathers and a large head with a long beak. It stared down at Jack and Annie, then it let out another cackle.
Weird, said Jack.
He found the bird in his book and read, The kookaburra is the best-known bird of Australia. There is even a popular song about it. The kookaburra is also called the laughing donkey. This is because the strange sound it makes reminds people of a braying donkey.
I know that song, said Annie.
She began singing,
Kookaburra sits on the old gum tree. Merry, merry king of the bush is he.
Jack wrote in his notebook, Kookaburra, a big kook. Annie stopped singing.
Hey, she said, there's another weird thing.
Where? Said Jack. Annie pointed to a big bluish-tan lump lying in a shallow, dusty hole.
Is it alive? Said Jack.
They stepped closer to the big lump.
It looks like it's breathing,
said Annie. The lump was an animal lying on its back. Its paws were crossed over its chest.
It had huge feet, large ears, a face like a deer's, and a very long tail. It also had a very fat stomach.
Just then, a small head peered out of its stomach. "Whoa," said Jack.
"Oh, wow, it's a kangaroo with her baby in her pouch," said Annie.
"Great," said Jack. "Remember, we have to get a gift from a kangaroo."
Their voices woke the kangaroo. The animal jumped up from her shallow bed. She glared at Jack and Annie. Her baby peeked out of her pouch. The mother kangaroo gave an angry stamp.
"Oh, we're sorry," Annie said. "We didn't mean to wake you up."
The kangaroo eyed Annie curiously. Then she took a giant hop toward her. Copying the kangaroo, Annie hopped toward the big animal. The kangaroo hopped again. Annie hopped. The kangaroo and Annie began hopping around each other. They looked as if they were dancing. Jack couldn't believe how graceful the kangaroo was. She seemed to fly through the air, then land as softly as a butterfly. He looked up kangaroo in his book and read, "The kangaroo is the most famous of the marsupials. The female carries her baby, known as a joey, in her pouch. Scientists call the kangaroo a macropod, which means big foot, and big feet help a kangaroo hop higher than any other animal in the world. With a running leap, a large kangaroo can jump over a school bus."
"Forget the hopping contest, Annie," Jack called. "She can out-hop you by a mile."
He pulled out his notebook and wrote, "Kangaroo, Bigfoot, can jump over a school bus." The kangaroo began stamping her feet again.
"What's wrong?" said Annie.
The kangaroo froze. "Grrr," Teddy growled from Jack's backpack. Some nearby bushes moved. A moment later, three dogs crept silently into the clearing. They were sand-colored and mean-looking. Teddy growled once more. But the dogs crept toward the kangaroo. Suddenly, the mother kangaroo sprang into the air, away from the dogs. The dogs chased after her.
"Stop!" cried Annie. "Stop! Leave her alone!"
As the kangaroo jumped, she turned in midair and landed facing a different direction. She then zigzagged over rocks and bushes. Howling, the wild dogs raced after the kangaroo and her baby. Chapter 4. Joey.
"Oh, no," cried Annie. "We have to save her."
She took off after the dogs.
"Urf, urf, urf,"
Teddy barked over Jack's shoulder. Jack ran after Annie with a book under his arm. He ran over the dry, cracked ground, past scrubby bushes and scattered gum trees. Jack kept his eye on Annie running ahead of him. He saw her stop suddenly. She turned and dropped to her knees.
"What happened?" he shouted.
"Come look," she said.
Jack reached Annie. Beside her in the grass was the baby kangaroo. It was trembling.
"Don't be scared," Annie was saying.
Then she looked at Jack.
"Where's his mom? Why did she drop him?"
"I don't know," said Jack.
He put his pack on the ground and opened the Australia book. Teddy jumped out of the pack. The little dog tried to sniff the baby kangaroo.
"Don't scare him, Teddy," Annie said.
Teddy sat back and watched politely. Jack opened the Australia book and found a picture of a baby kangaroo. He read, "The biggest enemy of the kangaroo is the dingo, the wild dog of Australia. When a mother kangaroo is chased by dingoes, she may throw her joey out of her pouch. Without the extra weight in her pouch, she can leap faster and farther. She then leads the dingoes away from her baby. If she escapes the dingoes, she returns to the joey."
"Oh, Jack," Annie said sadly. "I hope his mother escapes from the dingoes."
"Me too," said Jack.
"Hi, Joey," said Annie.
She gently patted the baby kangaroo.
"He's so soft, Jack."
Jack knelt down and touched the brown fur. It was soft, the softest fur he had ever felt. The shy little kangaroo stared at Jack with big brown eyes and trembled.
"Don't be scared, Joey," Annie said. "Your mom's going to come back for you."
Joey jumped away from Jack and Annie. He hopped toward Jack's pack, which was sitting on the ground. The baby kangaroo took a giant leap and dived headfirst into the pack. His whole body went inside, but his big feet stuck out. Then he turned himself over and peeked out at Jack and Annie. They both laughed.
"He thinks your pack is a pouch," said Annie. "I know. Put it on backward. It will feel like when his mom carries him."
Jack put his Australia book on the ground. Then Annie helped him put the pack on his chest instead of on his back. The Joey was heavy.
"There," Annie said. "You look just like a mother kangaroo."
"Oh, brother," said Jack. But he patted the baby's soft fur. "Don't worry," he said to Joey. "You can stay in there till your mom gets back."
"Here, Joey, would you like some grass to eat?" asked Annie.
Annie scooped up a handful of grass and gave it to the kangaroo. He munched the grass, keeping his big eyes on Annie.
"I hope his mom comes back for him soon," she said worriedly.
"Yeah," said Jack.
He looked around the dry forest. There was no sign of the mother kangaroo. But Jack saw something else.
"Look," he said to Annie.
The wisp of smoke in the sky had turned into a big black cloud. Jack noticed the smell of burning wood was much stronger.
"What are those campers doing?" said Annie. "Are they making a bonfire now or what?"
A feeling of dread came over Jack. "What if," he said, "what if?" In the distance, a tree suddenly burst into flames.
"We're looking at a wildfire," he said.
Chapter 5. Wildfire.
"Wildfire?" said Annie.
"The woods are so dry, everything's starting to burn," said Jack. "We have to get out of here."
"We can't leave Joey," said Annie.
"We'll take him with us," said Jack.
"But what if his mom comes back for him and he's not here?" said Annie.
"We don't have a choice," said Jack.
Just then the kookaburra flew through the sky, cackling. The emus raced by at top speed. The air was getting smokier and smokier. The fire was spreading quickly.
"Come on," said Jack. "We have to get back to the treehouse before it burns down."
"Which way's the treehouse?" said Annie.
"I'm not sure," said Jack.
Smoke hid the treetops. Jack's eyes stung.
"Forget it," he said. "Let's just get away from this smoke. Come on."
Jack and Teddy turned to go. The baby kangaroo hid his head inside Jack's pack.
"I'll catch up," said Annie. "I have to get something."
"What?"
cried Jack. But Annie had dashed off in the other direction.
"Come back," Jack shouted.
"Annie!"
Branches cracked and fell from the trees. Smoke billowed everywhere.
"Arf, arf!"
"Annie!"
Jack cried. Jack choked on the smoke. He coughed and rubbed his eyes. The air was getting hotter. He had no choice. He had to run.
"Arf, arf!"
Teddy barked from somewhere ahead.
"Hurry, Annie!"
Jack called helplessly. Then he took off after Teddy. He stumbled blindly through the brush. All he could do was follow the sound of Teddy's barking. His pack felt heavier and heavier. He held it up with his arms and kept going. Suddenly, Jack heard Annie calling him. Jack stopped.
"Here! Here! Here! We're here!" he shouted. "Come on, follow us!"
Annie appeared through the haze of the hot smoke. She was coughing. Tears streamed from her eyes. She was carrying the koala.
"Come on," Jack cried. "Follow Teddy."
"Arf, arf."
Jack and Annie carried Joey and the koala. They followed Teddy's barking through the smoky, fire-filled forest. Finally, they came to a giant rock.
"Arf, arf."
Teddy was standing on a ledge. Behind him was the mouth of a cave. Through the smoke, Jack could barely see the little dog. Teddy barked again and vanished inside the cave.
"Follow him," said Annie.
Chapter 6. Hand to Hand. Jack and Annie climbed onto the rock ledge and stepped into the cave. The air inside was cleaner and cooler than the air outside.
"I can't see anything," said Jack.
He patted the head of the baby kangaroo.
"Me neither," said Annie. "Arf, arf."
"I guess we'll have to follow Teddy's bark," said Annie.
"Let's hold hands."
She held out her free hand to Jack. Jack took it, then he put his other hand out and touched the wall.
The Joey moved in his pack. Jack and Annie walked into the darkness.
Arf! Teddy kept barking, leading them on. Arf! 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 Arf!
Suddenly, Jack felt something thump against his leg. He stopped and gasped.
What is it? Said Annie.
Arf! It was Teddy. His tail was wagging and hitting Jack's leg.
What is it, boy? Jack asked him.
Teddy let out a howl. As he howled, an amazing thing happened. A white line began to glow in the air. The glowing line grew until it looked like a giant snake. Then glowing handprints appeared below the snake. Jack felt Annie squeeze his hand.
I think it's painted on the wall, she said.
But what is it? Whispered Jack.
I don't know, said Annie.
She let go of Jack and put her hand inside one of the painted handprints. Jack did the same. Despite the glowing painting, the rock felt smooth and cool. It almost seemed to breathe. A ghost-like whistling sound came through the darkness, then a loud boom.
What's that?
Jack quickly took his hand off the wall. The boom came again.
It sounded like thunder, said Annie.
Arf, arf!
Teddy's leaving, said Annie.
She grabbed Jack's hand. They turned back the way they had come and followed Teddy's barking again.
Arf!
They followed the little dog until they saw a flash of light.
Lightning, said Annie.
Lightning and thunder! We're at the front of the cave! Yay!
Annie pulled Jack toward the mouth of the cave and out into a pouring rain. Chapter 7. Rain, rain, rain. Rain fell on Jack's head and on Joey's head. Rain fell on Annie's head and on Teddy's head and on the koala's head. Annie opened her mouth and drank the rainwater. Jack did the same. The water tasted better than any water he'd ever drunk. When Jack looked back at the woods, misty steam was rising from the charred ground and burning bushes. The heavy rain was putting out the wildfire.
You'll be safe now, Annie said to the koala. I'll put you back in a nice gum tree, then you can finish your nap.
I see a tree that's not burned, said Jack.
They walked over to the unburned gum tree. Annie placed the koala in the fork of two branches.
Go back to sleep now, she said softly. Pretend the fire was all a dream.
Good night, said Jack.
The koala seemed to smile at them. Then he closed his eyes and went to sleep as if he'd never been disturbed at all. Jack sighed and looked around.
Man, he said, we were lucky that a storm came.
Annie smiled.
It wasn't just luck, she said. It was magic.
Magic? Said Jack.
Yeah, the glowing hands and the snake, said Annie. Somehow they brought the storm.
That doesn't make sense, said Jack.
Joey stirred in his pack. Suddenly Jack remembered something.
Hey, we have to get Joey back to the place where his mom left him, he said, or she won't be able to find him.
Where was that place? Said Annie.
I don't know, said Jack.
He looked around at the rainy gray forest. Everything looked the same.
Teddy can find the spot, said Annie.
Without even a bark, the little dog took off across the wet, muddy ground. Once again, Jack and Annie followed him. Jack's back was beginning to hurt from carrying Joey.
Arf, arf!
Jack and Annie caught up with Teddy. He stood over the Australia book. It was wet but not burned.
Hooray, we found it, said Annie.
That's right, said Jack. I left our book in the spot where we found Joey.
Once again, Teddy helped us out, said Annie.
She patted the little dog's head.
Thanks, Teddy, Jack said.
He picked up the Australia book. The cover was wet, but the pages looked okay. The little kangaroo peeked out of his pack as Jack tucked the book under his arm.
Don't worry, Joey, Annie said. We'll stay right here till your mom comes back for you.
If she hasn't already come, Jack thought worriedly.
Jack and Annie stood in the rain with Teddy and Joey and waited. They waited and waited. The rain turned to a drizzle, then the drizzle turned to a light sprinkle. Still they waited. Jack grew sadder and sadder. Maybe the mother kangaroo had come and left. Or maybe she'd been caught by the dingoes. or maybe she had been killed by the wildfire. Jack was afraid to look at Annie, afraid to say anything.
"I know what you're thinking," she said finally.
Jack patted Joey's head and sighed.
"Let's wait a little longer," he said. "If she doesn't come back soon, we'll take him home with—"
"Arf!" Teddy barked softly.
"Listen," said Annie.
Jack listened. The sound was very faint at first, but then it grew louder. It was a squishy sound. It was a squashy sound. It was the sound of big feet slapping through mud.
Chapter 8. The Rainbow Serpent. The mother kangaroo bounded out of the trees. She landed 10 feet away from Jack, Annie, Teddy, and Joey. They all were still for a moment, as if they all were holding their breath. Then Joey tried to jump out of Jack's backpack.
"Hold on," said Jack.
He put his pack on the ground. The little kangaroo leaped out. He leaped again, then again, and dived headfirst into his mother's pouch. Joey turned himself over inside the pouch, then he peeked out at Jack and Annie.
"Yay!" said Jack and Annie together. They laughed and clapped with relief.
"He looks happy to be home," said Annie.
"His mother looks happy too," said Jack.
The mother kangaroo was gazing down at her Joey. She patted his head with her small paws. Then she looked at Jack and Annie with soft eyes.
"She's saying thank you to us," Annie said.
"You're welcome," Jack said.
"It was no problem," Annie told the kangaroo. "You have a great Joey."
The kangaroo gave a little nod. Then she bent over and used a front paw to pick up a small piece of bark from the wet grass. The kangaroo held the piece of bark out to Jack and Annie. Jack took it from her.
"Oh, man," he whispered. "It's our gift from a kangaroo."
The kangaroo then sprang into the air. She bounded gracefully away through the charred forest.
"Thanks," called Jack.
"Bye,"
called Annie.
"Good luck."
"Arf, arf," Teddy barked.
The rain stopped as Jack studied the piece of bark. There was a tiny painting on it. It was just like the snake painting in the cave.
"I wonder what the snake means," said Jack.
Jack opened the wet cover of the Australia book. He carefully turned the damp pages. He found a picture of the snake painting.
"Listen," said Jack.
He read, "The first people of Australia are called Aborigines. They have lived there for 40,000 years. Their myths take place in a time they call Dream Time. In Dream Time, there is a rainbow serpent who sends life-giving rain. Aborigine artists paint the rainbow serpent on cave walls or on pieces of bark. In special ceremonies, they sometimes honor the rainbow serpent by painting their handprints on the magic snake."
"See?" said Annie. "That explains everything."
"Explains what?" said Jack.
"We put our hands on the painting of the rainbow serpent," she said. "It was like a special ceremony, so the rainbow serpent sent the rain to put out the wildfire."
"Arf!"
Teddy barked. Jack frowned.
"But it's not a real creature," he said. "It's in dream time, not real time."
Annie smiled.
"Then how do you explain that?" she said.
She pointed at the sky. The rain clouds were gone. The sun had come back out. A rainbow curved across the blue Australian sky.
"Oh, man," whispered Jack.
Though the air was warm again, he shivered.
"Teddy led us to the painting," said Annie. "We should thank him."
"How did he know about the rainbow serpent in the cave?" Jack asked.
"I told you," said Annie. "He has a touch of magic."
They looked down at the little dog. Teddy tilted his head and seemed to smile.
"Hey, we have all four gifts now," said Annie.
"Oh, yeah," said Jack.
"Let's go home and see if Teddy's spell is broken," said Annie.
"Arf, arf."
Jack put the bark painting and the Australia book in his pack. Then they all headed through the wet, steamy forest in the direction of the treehouse.
I hope the treehouse didn't get burned, he said.
They went past the clearing, past the gum trees and bushes. The treehouse was waiting for them.
It's still here, said Annie.
She grabbed the rope ladder and started up. Jack put Teddy in his pack and followed. Inside the treehouse, Teddy wiggled out of the pack. He pawed the Pennsylvania book.
Arf, arf.
Okay, okay, said Jack. He pointed at a picture of the Frog Creek Woods. I wish we could go there.
Over the rainbow, said Annie.
And the wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still. Absolutely still. Chapter 9. What Boy? Welcome back, came a soft, lovely voice. Jack opened his eyes. It was Morgan. They hadn't seen Morgan in a long time.
Morgan,
cried Annie. She threw her arms around the enchantress. Jack jumped up and hugged Morgan, too. It's good to see you both, said Morgan.
Arf, arf.
And it's good to see you, too, Morgan said, smiling at the little dog.
Look,
said Annie. She reached into Jack's pack and pulled out the piece of painted bark.
A gift from a kangaroo.
We have all four gifts now, said Jack.
Good work, said Morgan. She picked up their first gift. It was the pocket watch from the Titanic. Once upon a time, there was a boy who wasted time, Morgan said. This watch teaches him that time is very precious. It must be used wisely. Morgan picked up their second gift, the eagle's feather from the Lakota Indians. Sometimes the boy was afraid to stand up for himself, she said. The eagle's feather teaches him that a small creature can be one of the bravest. Morgan picked up the lotus flower from the forest in India. Sometimes the boy did not respect nature, she said. This flower teaches him that nature holds many wonders. Morgan picked up the piece of bark with the painting of the rainbow serpent. Sometimes the boy didn't want to study other times and places, she said. This painting teaches him there is mystery, magic, and wisdom in the traditions of ancient peoples.
What boy? Jack asked.
Who are you talking about? Asked Annie.
Morgan didn't answer right away. She placed her hands on Jack's and Annie's shoulders. Thank you, she said, for helping this boy learn his lessons. Thank you for breaking the spell.
What boy?
Jack asked again.
Arf, arf, arf.
Jack and Annie looked over at Teddy. Then something magical happened. In a flutter of time, in the spin of a whirlwind, Teddy was changed. He was no longer a dog. He was a boy. Chapter 10, Dreamtime. The boy was on the ground, on his hands and knees. Meet my young helper from Camelot, said Morgan. The boy glanced up. He had a friendly, freckled face and twinkly dark eyes. His hair was the same color that Teddy's fur had been. He looked a bit older than Jack, about 10 or so.
Am I back? He asked.
You're back, said Morgan. The boy leaped up and hugged her.
Thank you, he cried.
And I hope next time you'll ask before trying the spells in my spell book, said Morgan. The boy grinned sheepishly. I promise. Then he looked at Jack and Annie. I accidentally changed myself into a dog, he said. Annie laughed.
But at least I got to have exciting adventures as a dog, he said.
You are a great dog, said Annie. We liked you as Teddy. What's your real name?
If you like, you can keep calling me Teddy, the boy said. Or how about Ted?
Okay, Ted, said Annie.
Jack just nodded. He was still in shock. Ted is training to work in my library at Camelot, said Morgan. He has a rare gift for magic.
Cool, said Annie.
You helped us a lot, Ted, said Jack,
finally finding his voice.
Oh, no, it was both of you who helped me, said Ted. You helped break the spell, and I found new stories to take home.
You did? Said Annie.
Ted nodded.
The story of the Titanic, the story of White Buffalo Woman, the story of the Wounded Tiger, and the story of the Rainbow Serpent, he said. I'll write them down as soon as I get home, so people can read them in Morgan's library.
And home is where we must go now, I'm afraid, said Morgan.
Oh, said Annie sadly, that's too bad.
Yeah, said Jack, he was sad too.
I know we will meet again someday, said Ted.
I hope so, said Jack.
Me too, said Annie. Bye.
She started down the ladder. Jack pulled on his pack. With a heavy heart, he followed. When they got to the ground, they looked up. Morgan and Ted were at the window. They both seemed to glow in the late afternoon light. The magic treehouse will return for you soon, said Morgan. I promise. She waved and they waved back. Goodbye, Jack and Annie, she said.
Arf, said Ted.
In a flutter of time, in the spin of a whirlwind, the magic treehouse was gone. For a long moment, Jack and Annie stared at the empty tree.
Ready for dinner?
Annie asked softly. Jack nodded. He felt dazed as they walked silently through the Frog Creek woods. When they came to their street, the sun was setting. A flock of blackbirds flew through the silvery pink sky. Annie broke their silence as they headed for their house.
We had great adventures with Teddy. I mean Ted, didn't we?
She said.
Yeah, said Jack. It was like...
He searched for the right words.
Like...
Like living in dream time, said Annie.
Yeah, said Jack.
He smiled.
That was exactly what it was like.
Civil War on Sunday. Chapter 1, A Light in the Woods. Jack looked out his window. It was a dreary Sunday afternoon. There were dark clouds in the sky. Thunder rumbled in the distance. Jack stared down the street at the Frog Creek Woods.
When is the magic treehouse coming back?
He wondered.
Hey, guess what?
Annie said. She charged into Jack's room.
I saw a light flash in the woods.
It was just lightning, said Jack.
No, it was magic. A swirl of light, said Annie. I think the treehouse just came back.
I'm sure it was just lightning, Jack said. Didn't you hear the thunder?
Yeah, said Annie. But let's go check anyway.
She started out of Jack's room. Then she peeked back in.
Bring your backpack just in case, she said.
Jack was always glad for a chance to look for the magic treehouse. He grabbed his backpack and followed Annie down the stairs.
Where are you two going? Their mom called.
Out to play, said Annie.
Don't go far, said their mom, and come in if it starts to rain.
We will, said Jack. Don't worry.
They slipped out the front door. Then they ran up the street and into the Frog Creek Woods. The woods were dark under the storm clouds. A cool wind shook the leaves. Soon Jack and Annie came to the tallest oak tree.
Oh, man, said Jack. You are right.
The magic treehouse stood out against the gray sky.
Morgan,
called Annie. There was no sign of the enchantress.
Let's go up, said Jack.
He grabbed the rope ladder and started up. Annie followed. They climbed into the treehouse. It was hard to see in the dim light.
Look, said Annie.
She pointed to a piece of paper and a book lying on the floor. Jack picked up the paper. Annie picked up the book.
Listen, said Jack.
He held the paper close to the window and read aloud.
Dear Jack and Annie, Camelot is in trouble. To save the kingdom, please find these four special kinds of writing for my library. Something to follow, something to send,
something to learn, something to lend. Thank you, Morgan.
Camelot is in trouble, said Jack. What's that mean?
I don't know, said Annie, but we better hurry and find these writings. Let's go look for the first, something to follow.
I wonder where we should look for it, said Jack. What's the title of the book you're holding? Annie held the book close to the window to read the title.
Yikes, she said softly.
She showed the book to Jack. On the cover was a painting of a peaceful-looking field and a blue sky. The title said, The Civil War.
The Civil War? Said Jack. Cool.
Annie frowned.
Cool, she said. War's not cool.
It sort of is, Jack said uncomfortably. He knew war was bad, but some parts of it seemed fun, like a game.
I guess we'll find out, said Annie.
She pointed at the cover.
I wish we could go there.
Thunder boomed through the woods. The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 2, Cruel War. Glaring sunlight filled the treehouse.
It's really hot here, said Jack.
Especially in these clothes, said Annie.
Their clothes had magically been changed. Annie wore a long dress. Jack wore scratchy pants and a long-sleeved shirt. His backpack was now a leather knapsack.
Where are we? Asked Annie.
They looked out the window together. The treehouse had landed in a tree at the edge of a field, the same field on the cover of the book.
It looks so peaceful, said Jack. Where's the Civil War?
There,
whispered Annie with a shiver. She pointed to the woods beyond the field. Jack saw a soldier riding a horse out of the woods. The horse was covered with mud. The soldier's blue uniform was torn. His arm was bloody. Another man rode into the field. His blue uniform was in rags, too. His head was bandaged.
Oh, man, whispered Jack. Who are they?
He opened the Civil War book and found a painting of some soldiers in blue. He read to Annie.
1861 to 1865.
The Civil War is also called the War Between the States because it was fought between the Southern and Northern states of the United States. Southerners wore gray uniforms and were called Confederate soldiers. Northerners wore blue uniforms and were called Union soldiers. So they're Union soldiers, said Jack. He pulled out his notebook and wrote, Civil War 1861 to 1865. Blue equals North equals Union. Gray equals South equals Confederate. Jack looked at his book again. He read aloud. The Civil War was a cruel and bloody war. More people died in this war than in all of America's other wars put together. One out of every five young men in the nation died or was wounded.
That's so sad, said Annie.
Jack wrote in his notebook, Cruel War.
Wow, they keep coming, Annie said.
Jack looked up. More Union soldiers were coming through the field. These didn't have horses. They all looked sad and weary. Some of them limped. Some of them helped others along. One man stumbled and fell down.
I have to help, said Annie.
Wait, said Jack.
She started down the rope ladder.
You can't help, said Jack. A kid can't help.
But Annie kept going.
Don't forget, we have to find some special writing for Morgan, Jack called in a loud whisper. Something to follow.
He packed the Civil War book and his notebook in his knapsack. Then he started down the ladder. When he stepped onto the ground, Jack saw Annie in the distance. She was holding her hand out to the fallen soldier. She helped him to his feet. The soldier slowly started walking again. Annie walked beside him.
Oh, brother, said Jack,
and he hurried to catch up with Annie. The sun was scorching hot as Jack ran through the dry field. He was sweaty in his scratchy clothes. He caught up with Annie.
Together they walked silently with the soldiers. At the edge of the field was a steep hill. Everyone stopped and gazed at the sight below them, rows and rows of white tents.
"Thank goodness," said the soldier beside Jack. "We're saved."
Chapter 3, Field Hospital. Jack and Annie walked with the soldiers into the camp. Outside one tent was a long line of men in torn blue uniforms. They looked tired and hurt. Many were bloody and barely able to stand. Women wearing dark dresses were giving out food and water to the men in line.
"Where are we?" asked Annie.
"I'll find out," said Jack.
He pulled out their book and found a picture of the campsite. He read,
"During the Civil War, field hospitals were set up quickly near battlefields to treat wounded soldiers. Soldiers stayed in the field hospitals for a short time before going back to fight, or moving to a larger hospital, or being sent home. This field hospital in Virginia took care of over 400 patients."
"That's a lot," said Annie.
"It sure is," said Jack.
He pulled out his notebook and wrote, "Field hospital, set up near battlefield." Jack read aloud again from the book. "More than 3,000 women helped out as nurses during the Civil War. Nursing was a new job for women in America. Before the war, only men had been nurses."
"Wow," said Annie. "Maybe we can be nurses."
"Forget it," said Jack. "Kids can't be nurses."
Jack wanted to find the special writing for Morgan and go home. The sad scene at the field hospital was making him feel sick.
"I'll just ask," said Annie.
She headed over to a nurse cooking over a campfire.
"Annie, we've got a mission," Jack called.
But Annie kept going. Jack heaved a sigh. He tucked his notebook and the Civil War book under his arm and followed her. Waves of heat rose from a small cooking fire. The young nurse was heating a pot of coffee. Flies buzzed everywhere.
"Hello," said Annie.
The nurse barely smiled at them. Her face was red and beaded with sweat. Her eyes looked terribly tired.
"Where are you from?" she asked.
"Frog Creek," said Annie. "We'd like to volunteer as nurses."
The young woman didn't seem at all surprised. "We could certainly use some help," she said, sighing. "Some of us have not slept for days."
"Why not?" asked Jack.
"The wounded are coming here from a battle near Richmond," said the nurse. "More and more keep coming. It never seems to end."
"Just tell us what to do," said Annie.
"While we feed the new patients, you can go to the first two tents," the young nurse said, "and give the other soldiers their noon meal."
She pointed to a basket filled with bread and potatoes. Next to it was a ladle and a bucket filled with water.
"Anything else?" Annie asked.
"Just try to give them comfort," the nurse said.
"How do we do that?" said Annie.
"I don't have time to show you," the nurse said. "But here's a list of things that can help."
She pulled a piece of paper from her apron pocket and handed it to Annie. Annie read the list to Jack.
"Be cheerful, lessen sorrow and give hope. Be brave, put aside your own feelings, don't give up."
"Follow that list," said the nurse, "and you can't go wrong." The nurse took the pot of coffee from the fire and carried it to the line of men.
"Follow," said Jack, "follow that list."
"That's what she said," said Annie.
Jack took the list from her.
"Don't you get it?" he said.
"This is it. We found it. The special writing for Morgan's library. Something to follow."
"Yes,"
said Annie. Jack put the paper into his knapsack.
"It was handed right to us," he said, smiling. "We can go home now."
"Oh, no, not now," said Annie. "We have to help as nurses first."
"But Annie," said Jack.
She picked up the food basket. Then she started toward the row of white tents.
"Wait, we're supposed to leave,"
Jack said weakly. Our mission is over. The truth was that he didn't want to help. He didn't want to be around wounded and suffering soldiers. It was too sad.
Bring the water bucket and the ladle, Annie shouted. Then she disappeared inside the first tent.
Jack groaned. He knew he couldn't change her mind. He pulled out the list and read the first line, Be cheerful.
Oh, brother, he said.
Jack put the list back into his knapsack. He picked up the heavy bucket. Hurrying clumsily after Annie, he tried to smile. Chapter 4. Freedom Fighters. Jack carried the water bucket into the tent. The scene inside was like a nightmare. The tent was hot and stuffy. A dozen injured soldiers lay on small cots. Some called for food, others begged for water or just moaned. Jack wanted to rush back outside, but Annie got right to work. She rolled up her sleeves and smiled.
Hi, everybody, she said cheerfully.
None of the soldiers smiled back.
I have good news, she said. We've brought lunch.
Annie moved down the row of cots. She handed out pieces of bread and chunks of potatoes to all the patients.
You'll be feeling better soon, she said to one sick man. You'll see your family again, she told another.
Jack looked around nervously. He wasn't sure what to do.
Give them water, Jack, Annie called to him.
Jack saw a tin cup beside each man's cot. He picked up the first cup. Carefully, he used the ladle to fill it with water. Keeping his eyes down, Jack handed the cup to the patient. He felt shy and uncomfortable. He didn't know what to say. Jack moved on to the next patient, then the next. He gave each wounded man a cup of water, but he never looked right at any of them or spoke a word. Soon Jack and Annie had finished passing out food and water.
Goodbye,
Annie said. She waved and left the tent. Jack quickly followed her.
Let's go home now, he begged once they were outside. We've got what we came for.
If we leave now, the patients in the next tent will go hungry and thirsty, said Annie.
Jack sighed.
Okay, he said. But after we take care of them, we're leaving for sure.
He followed Annie into the next tent. Just like the last tent, it was filled with wounded soldiers. But the soldiers in this tent were all African Americans.
Hi, everybody, Annie said, smiling warmly.
Again, she passed out potatoes and bread. She also talked and made jokes. Jack poured water into each of the tin cups. Again, he didn't speak to any of the soldiers. But as he handed over the last cup, a patient spoke to him.
Thank you for your kindness, son, the soldier said.
Jack glanced shyly at the man on the cot. He was an elderly, silver-haired black man.
You're welcome, said Jack.
He tried to think of something else to say. He remembered Annie's cheerful words.
You'll get well soon, he told the patient. You'll be with your family again.
The man shook his head.
No, I'll never be with my family again, he said quietly. My wife and children were sold long ago.
Sold? Said Jack.
Yes, we were slaves, the man said.
You were a slave? Asked Jack.
All of us in this tent were once slaves, the man said. We ran away from our owners in the South to fight to end slavery, to fight for freedom for our people. I ran barefoot for over 30 miles to tell the Union soldiers that the Confederates were going to attack.
The man fell silent.
You're a very brave freedom fighter, said Jack.
Thank you, son.
The man closed his eyes. Jack wanted to know more about slavery, but he didn't want to bother the weary patient. He pulled out the Civil War book. He found a picture of African Americans standing on a platform. The men, women, and children had chains on their hands and feet. Jack read, In the 1800s, the United States was divided over the issue of slavery. The North wanted the country to end all slavery.
But the South wanted to keep slaves because more than 4 million African-American slaves worked in the huge plantation fields there. This disagreement between the North and South led to the Civil War.
Jack looked down at the man's face. He looked very weary. Jack pulled the nurse's list of rules from his knapsack. "Lessen sorrow and give hope," he read.
Jack put the list away. He leaned close to the man and spoke in a soft voice.
"One day, your great-great-grandchildren will be doctors and lawyers," he said.
The man opened his eyes. Jack went on.
"They'll help run the government and schools. They'll be senators and generals and teachers and principals."
The man stared hard into Jack's eyes.
"Can you see the future, son?"
he asked. Jack nodded. "In a way," he said. The man smiled a beautiful smile.
"Thank you, son," he said. Then he closed his eyes again. "Good luck," whispered Jack.
He hoped the brave man would live to enjoy freedom.
"Ready to go home now, Jack?"
said Annie. She had finished passing out the food. Jack nodded. As he and Annie stepped out of the tent, they heard someone shout,
"She's back!"
A horse-drawn wagon was barreling into the camp.
"Who's back?"
asked Annie.
"Clara Barton," a patient said. "She runs this hospital."
"Clara Barton?" said Annie. "I don't believe it."
"Who's Clara Barton?" asked Jack.
He'd heard the name before, but he couldn't remember who she was.
"Who's Clara Barton?" said Annie. "Are you nuts?"
She ran to meet the wagon.
Chapter 5, Angel of the Battlefield.
Jack still didn't remember who Clara Barton was. He pulled out the Civil War book and read. Clara Barton was a famous Civil War nurse. When she began nursing, she used her own money for her supplies. She drove a horse-drawn ambulance right onto the battlefield to help save wounded soldiers. For this reason, she became known as the Angel of the Battlefield.
Jack put the book away. Then he hurried to Annie. He looked at the woman sitting in the driver's seat of the wagon.
"She doesn't look like an angel," Jack thought. The woman was very small. She had a plain, serious face and dark hair pulled back in a bun. She wore a long black skirt and a black jacket. In the back of her wagon were more wounded soldiers in torn, bloody uniforms. They moaned and cried out. Nurses, both men and women, were putting the wounded men on stretchers. Clara Barton wiped her forehead. She looked hot and tired.
"Can we help you, Miss Barton?"
Annie asked.
"Who are you?" said Clara Barton.
"Jack and Annie," said Annie. "We're volunteer nurses. What can we do, Miss Barton?"
Clara Barton smiled. "First, you can call me Clara," she said. "Second, would you ride with me back toward the battlefield? There are more wounded waiting to be picked up."
"Sure," said Annie.
Jack didn't answer. After seeing all the suffering men in the wagon, he was afraid of getting closer to the battlefield.
"And you?"
Clara asked Jack. Her dark, serious eyes looked right into his. Jack didn't want to admit he was afraid.
"Sure, no problem," he said.
"Very good," said Clara Barton. "Let's go." Jack and Annie climbed up into the driver's seat next to her. By now, all the soldiers had been taken out of the wagon.
"Take care of my new family members," Clara called to the nurses.
She snapped the reins. The horse-drawn ambulance rolled off, sending up clouds of dust. Chapter 6, Keep Low. The wagon jerked and swayed as it bumped over the dry ground. Jack felt as though he were frying in the hot sunlight. Dust from the road filled his throat and eyes. The boom of cannons grew louder and louder. Jack heard popping sounds, too, like the noise of firecrackers.
"What's that popping noise?" he shouted, blinded by the dust and sunlight.
"Musket fire," said Clara.
Jack remembered that muskets were long, old-fashioned guns.
"What are those flashes?" asked Annie.
Jack tried to open his eyes and see what she was talking about. He saw bright flashes of light in the distance and puffs of smoke in the sky.
"Cannon shells exploding," said Clara Barton. "Shells are like small bombs. They have ruined much farmland."
Jack squinted at the passing countryside. The ground was filled with ugly holes. Long ditches were also cut through the fields.
"Did the shells make those ditches too?" he asked.
"No, those are trenches the soldiers dug for a battle," Clara said. "Each side digs their own. Day after day they sit in the trenches firing their muskets at one another."
Jack tried to imagine how terrible it would be to sit in a trench all day, waiting to be shot, or waiting to shoot someone else.
"We have to get some water," said Clara.
She drove the wagon to a narrow creek. A stream of water flowed downhill, running over rocks. The wagon came to a halt. Jack heard a whistling sound, then another.
"Keep low," cried Clara.
"What's that?" Jack asked.
"Cannon fire," she said.
Jack and Annie crouched down in the driver's seat. Jack felt a rush of panic. He pulled out their list. His hands were shaking as he read,
"Be brave." "Oh, great," he thought.
Another cannon shell whizzed overhead, then another. The ground exploded over and over in flashes of light. Dirt clods flew everywhere. Clouds of smoke and more dust filled the air. The horses neighed and whinnied.
"Be brave," Jack thought. "Be brave."
Chapter 7. Helping Hands. The firing came to an end. The horses calmed down. The smoky air began to clear. Clara handed Jack and Annie each a canteen.
"Fill these quickly," she said. "We have no time to waste."
Jack's legs felt wobbly as he followed Annie to the creek. They filled their canteens, then climbed back into the wagon.
"Keep alert," said Clara. "Look for the wounded as they come off the battlefield."
She snapped the reins. The horses started off again. As they bumped along, Jack looked ahead for wounded soldiers.
"There," said Annie.
She pointed to a man limping toward them and waving his arms. The man looked very young, more like a teenage boy. His uniform was torn and bloody. It wasn't a blue uniform, though. It was gray. Clara pulled the horses to a stop.
"But he's a Confederate soldier," said Jack.
"When someone is hurt, you give them a helping hand no matter who they are," said Clara. Her voice got softer.
"I have seen courage and kindness on both sides of this war. Sometimes things are not as simple as they seem." Jack was glad they had stopped to help the soldier. He jumped out of the wagon.
"Do you need a helping hand?"
he asked the young man.
"Thank you,"
the soldier said softly. Jack helped him into the back of the wagon. The soldier lay down on a pile of blankets and closed his eyes. Jack climbed back onto the seat beside Clara. She snapped the reins and they rode on. They came across more ragged men resting in the shade of an oak tree. These soldiers all wore blue uniforms. Again, Clara stopped the horses.
"See if any of those men need a ride to the hospital," she said to Jack and Annie.
Jack glanced at the soldier sleeping in the back of the wagon.
"Can a Confederate and a Union soldier be together?" he asked worriedly.
Clara nodded. "Sometimes men are simply too sick and tired to be enemies anymore," she said. "Sometimes they even know each other. Many families and friendships have been torn apart by this war."
"Let's go," said Annie, hopping out of the wagon.
Jack followed her. They carried their canteens to the men under the oak tree.
"Hi," said Annie. "Does anyone need to go to the hospital?"
"Only John, our drummer boy," a soldier said. "He's suffering from heat stroke, but we all need some water, miss."
Jack saw a young boy lying on the ground. His eyes were closed.
"Oh, Jack," whispered Annie. "He looks just like you."
The boy did look a lot like Jack, just a few years older.
"We better get him to Clara's ambulance right away," Annie said.
She handed her canteen to one of the tired soldiers. Another soldier lifted the drummer boy to his feet. The boy opened his eyes and mumbled a few words. He tried to walk, but he swayed as if he were about to faint.
"Wait," Jack grabbed the boy.
"We'll give you a helping hand," he said.
The drummer boy put his arms around Jack and Annie's shoulders.
"Just a little further, John," Annie said. You're doing great. Just a little further.
The drummer boy moved as if he were walking in his sleep. His head hung down. His feet shuffled in the dust.
Take good care of him, one of the men called. We can't do without him.
Chapter 8. Brothers. Clara Barton had turned the wagon around. She helped Jack and Annie lift the drummer boy into the back.
The soldiers said he has heat stroke, Annie told Clara. His name is John.
The boy lay down next to the sleeping Confederate soldier.
He does have heat stroke, Clara said. The other boy also has a high fever. We must get them to the hospital at once. Can you two stay in the back of the wagon and do as I tell you?
Sure, said Jack and Annie.
Clara dampened two clean cloths with water from Jack's canteen.
Gently press these cloths against their faces to help cool them off, she said.
She gave the cloths to Jack and Annie. Then she went to the front of the wagon and climbed in. The wagon started forward. Jack and Annie gently patted the soldiers' faces with the damp cloths. Jack looked at the young men lying side by side. The two seemed far more alike than different.
In another time and place, they might have been friends, Jack thought.
Finally, the wagon arrived at the field hospital. The Confederate soldier was put on a stretcher and carried to a tent. Two soldiers wearing bandages put the drummer boy on a stretcher.
Could you stay with John a while? Clara Barton asked Jack and Annie.
Sure, said Jack. Try to bring down his fever, Clara said. A nurse will give you ice packs to press against his skin. Find me when his fever is lower.
The drummer boy was carried into an empty tent. Jack and Annie followed. John was put on a cot. Then a nurse brought some rags and a bucket filled with ice. Jack and Annie were left alone with the boy. Jack wrapped some ice in a rag. He pressed the ice pack against the boy's head and neck and arms. Annie fanned the air to cool John off and to keep away the flies. Jack felt so hot, he pressed an ice pack against his own face for a moment. Then he looked up Drummer Boys in his Civil War book. He read, The Civil War was the last war to use drummer boys. The drumbeat was used to give orders to soldiers. Different beats told them when to eat, how to march, and even how to fight. On smoky battlefields, the boys' drumming helped soldiers find one another and keep together.
Wow, said Jack.
He closed the book, pulled out his notebook, and wrote,
Drummer boy, really important job.
Suddenly John shouted. Jack looked up from his notebook. The drummer boy was still asleep, but he was waving his arms as if he were having a nightmare. Annie shook the boy's arm.
Wake up, John, she said. You're okay. Wake up.
The drummer boy opened his eyes.
You were having a bad dream, said Annie. You're safe now. You'll see your family again soon. No, no, the boy said. He sounded frantic. I have to go back to the battlefield. No, you don't have to fight anymore, said Annie. You can go home and be safe.
No, the boy said. They need me. They need my drum.
He sounded more and more upset. Jack thought about their list.
Put aside your own feelings, he remembered.
Okay, John, said Jack. You can go back as soon as you feel better.
Jack, said Annie. He'll get hurt or killed. I'm afraid for him.
Me too, Jack said softly. But we have to put our own feelings aside. That's one of the things on our list.
Annie sighed.
Okay,
she said sadly. She looked at John.
If you want to fight again in the Civil War, you can, if that's what you really want.
Thank you, the boy whispered.
You know, you're the bravest kid I've ever met, Jack said.
The drummer boy smiled at Jack.
You look just like my little brother, he said hoarsely.
You look just like my big brother, said Jack, except I don't have a big brother. I don't have any brothers.
The three of them laughed. The drummer boy's laugh was very soft. The boy laid his head back on his pillow and closed his eyes again. In a moment, he was sleeping peacefully. A smile was on his lips.
Annie felt his forehead.
His fever's gone down, she said. We should go tell Clara.
Annie left the tent. Jack got up and slowly followed her. When he reached the entrance of the tent, he turned and looked back. The shadows of twilight fell across the boy's calm, sleeping face. It was strange. Jack hardly knew the drummer boy, but he felt they could be brothers. Listening to the cannon fire in the distance, Jack was afraid for the boy.
Will he live to see his family again?
Jack wondered.
Good luck, John, Jack said softly.
With a heavy heart, Jack stepped out into the warm evening air. Chapter 9. Don't Give Up. Annie, said Jack.
Over here, she called.
Jack saw two figures standing in the twilight. He walked over to Annie and Clara. They all stared in the direction of the distant battlefield. Bright lights flashed against the dark blue horizon, cannon shells exploding. Every time you see a flash, you know a shell may have taken a life or many lives, said Clara.
That's awful, said Annie.
Yes, it is, said Clara. A whole world can vanish in that flash. All a young man's joys and sorrows, all his memories.
This is a cruel war, said Annie.
All wars are cruel, said Clara Barton. People feel they must fight for causes they believe in, but they soon discover that war is not about glory and fame. It's about misery and terrible pain and sadness.
It makes me miss my mom and dad, said Annie. It makes me really miss them.
Annie sounded tired and homesick. Finally, she had lost her cheerfulness. I think it's time for you two to go home, said Clara. Jack thought of all the wounded men who needed food and water and kindness and comfort.
No, Jack said. We have to stay. We can't give up. That's on the list. Don't give up.
Jack pulled out their list to show Clara Barton. Oh, yes, she said, nodding. I see one of my nurses has written down the things I often say. Let me add one thing more. Do not forget the ones who love you. Jack heaved a big sigh. He was homesick, too.
Can we keep the list? He asked.
Of course, said Clara. You don't have to work in a hospital to follow my words. They work in all of life, no matter where you go.
Thanks, said Jack.
My thanks to both of you, said Clara Barton. You were great helpers.
You were a great teacher, said Annie.
Goodbye, said Clara Barton. Be very careful going home.
We will, said Jack and Annie. Bye.
The sun was setting as they walked out of the camp. The boom of cannons sounded in the distance. Soldiers sang a song around a campfire. We're tending tonight on the old campground. Give us a song to cheer our weary hearts, a song of home and friends we love so dear. Jack and Annie walked through the darkening field. By the time they reached the woods, the stars were out. They climbed up the rope ladder to the treehouse. Annie grabbed the Pennsylvania book.
Wait, said Jack.
He looked out the window. He couldn't see anything below, but the soldier's song still carried through the warm, starry night. Many are the hearts that are weary tonight, wishing for the war to cease. As Jack listened, he thought of Clara Barton, the elderly slave, the young Confederate soldier, and John, the drummer boy.
War is not a game, Jack said softly. It is definitely not a game.
Many are the hearts looking for the right to see the dawn of peace. The song ended. The cannon fire stopped. The night was quiet, except for the croaking of frogs.
Ready?
Annie whispered.
Ready, said Jack. I really wish we could go home, Annie said, pointing to the picture of the Frog Creek woods.
The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 10. Home, Sweet Home. There was a booming in the distance. Jack opened his eyes and caught his breath.
Is that cannon fire?
He wondered. Are we still back in the Civil War?
We're home, said Annie. Home, sweet home.
Oh, man, Jack whispered. They were home. They were back in the Frog Creek woods. They were wearing their own comfortable clothes again. The cannon fire was really only thunder. At that moment, Jack loved the thunder. Raindrops tapped against the treehouse. We better hurry, said Jack.
Wait, leave the list in the treehouse, said Annie. It's the first special writing for Morgan's library. Something to follow.
Jack took the list of Clara Barton's rules out of his pack. He put it on the floor next to Morgan's letter.
I wonder how that list will help save Camelot, he said.
I don't know, said Annie. But you know what's weird about getting that list? I think we couldn't just have taken it home when we first got it. We had to live it first.
Jack nodded. Annie was completely right, he thought. He picked up his backpack.
Wait, I see another note, said Annie.
She picked a piece of paper off the treehouse floor. On it was written, Come back on Wednesday.
I guess that's when Morgan wants us to look for the next special writing, said Annie.
That's in 3 days, said Jack. Let's go home and rest.
He started down the rope ladder. Annie followed. When they stepped onto the ground, the rain began to pour down.
Run, said Jack.
They ran through the Frog Creek woods, then down their street. They ran to their porch and dashed into their dry, cozy house. They found their parents reading in the living room.
Dad, Mom, Annie cried. We're so glad to see you.
Well, we're glad to see you too, their dad said, sounding a little puzzled.
Go put on dry clothes, said their mom. Jack and Annie started up to their rooms. Halfway up the stairs, Jack stopped.
Oh, I have a question, he called to his parents. Did anyone in our family fight in the Civil War?
Their dad looked surprised.
Yes, he said. One of your great-great-great-grandfathers was a drummer boy.
Oh, man, whispered Jack. What was his name, Dad?
Asked Annie.
John, their dad said.
Jack and Annie gasped.
And what happened to John? Jack asked. Was he hurt in the war?
No, he grew up to be a school teacher, their mom said. He had 5 children. Jack and Annie whooped with joy.
That's great news, said Annie.
Really great news, said Jack. Thanks for telling us.
Sure. Their dad smiled, though he looked puzzled again. As Jack hurried up to his room, some words from the Civil War song ran through his mind. Give us a song to cheer our weary hearts, a song of home.